Welcome today to an interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Vaclav Vinchalik, IT Authority, founder, and president of Pacific Coast Information Systems Limited. Vaclav, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
Thank you. My pleasure. Always welcome.
Vaclav, can you describe what triggered your interest in computing and in business?
Very good question. My interest in technology and computing specifically goes, I would say, almost to my childhood. I was raised in very technically savvy company. Anybody from my grandfather, father, my uncle were involved in technology in some shape and form. My grandfather and father were the pioneers and definitely leaders in communication technology, telecommunication technology, back in Czechoslovakia, and so the technology discussion around dinner table was something I got used to. And as I came to Canada, definitely the IT or the computer industry was something I was always interested in. And then I saw the huge opportunity to not only do technology, but bring the technology and maybe sense of business to what I like to do, and it's running a company and be very useful in the marketplace.
I see. So I can see how that triggered your interest in, for example, getting a master's in electrical engineering, and you've also worked with Nokia. Can you profile some of the work and valuable lessons you learned from these experiences?
Oh, very much so. Yes, as I indicated, the electrical engineering was kind of in my genes right from beginning. And when I worked for Nokia, that was during my postgrad studies at the Czech Technical University in Prague, I was able to secure a half-year internship with Nokia. And at that time, I was working in Tampere for the R&D department of Nokia, and we were doing the what's now, you know, everybody's using the GSM cellular switching system. So I was part for that period of time. With the part of the team, and it was a great experience where I was for first time I was able to use what I was studying for a long, long time. What we had discussion around dinner table, I was able to use in practice, and definitely working for Nokia was highlight for my career at that time. It was a very pleasant experience.
Vaclav, what was the nature then of your hub work?
Oh, okay. Hub work. That was a project which we did for this conglomerate of insurance agencies. Hub International is it's a holding company or umbrella for insurance companies through North America, and they came to us to work to create a portal for all their employees. And to be able to cross-sell across various divisions and to be able to share the experience, expertise, and knowledge within this large group. It's about, at that time when we work on that project, it was about 2,000-plus employees, but I'm sure that from that time they acquired even more agencies across North America. The interesting part was before the word portal and community became kind of mainstream. So that was what we were working. So the very collaborative or collaboration portal where people can share information across a variety of not only the geographical distance, but also from various different business groups. It was a very interesting project, and we were even featured by IBM as a case study for that.
Since you developed the back-end web system for a major media network, what were and are the main challenges and solutions in this type of work?
Yes, you're referring to our work on the website for BCTV, which is which used to be the biggest TV station in British Columbia in Canada. Since then, the TV station was purchased by Canvest, and unfortunately, our work cannot be seen anymore. But at that time, it was, again, quite revolutionary undertaking. This was project done in 1998-99, so it was in the past millennium, so to say. And at that time, what we developed for them was a feature that through a browser, the editor or the news reporter could update the story real time on fly. Again, today nobody even thinks twice about it, but at that time it was, I would say, quite revolutionary for them. Usually the news media or the media, whether you have TV networks, radio stations or newspapers, they are very slow in adapting certain technologies, and definitely for them it was a breakthrough. And for us, it again taught us the importance to understand business requirements. So for technology company, it was very important to understand their point of view, what they're trying to reach, what kind of customers, what they're trying to get out of them. When at the highlight of or at the high of the project, we also did a newsletter which was mailed out every night with all the headline news. And before they were purchased, there were about 20,000 email receivers for that newsletter, and it was very popular. And it made definitely the BCTV a unique TV stations across North America for sure.
Can you describe your work with the Pacific Coast Informer and your blog, and what business and IT trends would you like to share?
Very good. What prompted to start the Pacific Coast Informer and the blog is that as we've been as a company in business for more than 13 years, and we see that the technology is coming to marketplace at such a speed that even for seasoned IT professional, it's sometimes difficult to keep up with all the technology. And what we aimed with the Pacific Coast Informer, more on the formal side, and with my blog on slightly less informal side, we try to educate people. We try to demonstrate the value of technology, or sometime the less value of the technology, and we want them to stop for a moment and think about all the implication when they use the technology, where they should or should not use, and what makes what kind of implications the technology have or has on their life. For example, one of the issue which is important to me is today's privacy and security. We very seldomly see that there are organizations who really protect people's privacy, who really embrace the security, and who really give the ownership of any information back to the customer. And this is definitely a trend which I see that it's happening now more and more, where people are not happy how they are treated by major web organizations, that they have no control over the content, they have no control over the private personal information. And this is something which I see this as a trend now going, when people trying to regain the ownership and control over their lives and digital lives and the information on the internet.
So what do you find are the key best practices then for integrating technology solutions to improve business productivity?
Oh, this is a very good question. Thank you. I would say that maybe we can start even with one best practice. And that's always the understanding the business driver. I cannot tell you how many times I saw technology implemented without real understanding of the business, without understanding the business needs and requirements, and the overall impact of technology on business. Unfortunately, again, I see over and over that rather than trying to understand the business process, people bring technology to solve business problems, and in many instances that definitely doesn't work. So I would start with the first best practice, and every time you want to implement any technology, start first with the business. Understand why you're doing it, where is the benefit to the business, and only after that you can start evaluating the technologies which they can bring you the benefit which you are looking for. The other best practices would be to find seasoned professionals or professionals who understand both the technology and the business. And I think that would be, if you go back to your previous question, as a trend, these people will be the most successful in future, the ones who understand business and technology at the same time and bridge the gap between the techies and business-only people.
See, you had talked about web security before, or sort of this whole idea of security. So what are the little known but important lessons around improving web security?
Yes, you are absolutely right that the web security is a very important part, and this as a company we are really trying to improve and create public awareness of how many issues today we have about web security. I don't want to use big words as a dire or as a disaster, but definitely we seeing that there's lots of things which can be done when it comes to web security. The vendors themselves trying to improve security of their operating systems, of the browsers, they trying to educate people, and that's very good. Unfortunately, what we see on the other side, that the providers of the websites are sometimes more than hesitant to do anything about the security, even when they are alerted that something like that can happen. The advice for consumer on the end user who's browsing the internet is always be very aware where you're going. Unfortunately, even reputable websites are not always guarantee that you are not exposed to a risk. But it's like when you do shopping for food, you're going to places where you know that you get fresh food which doesn't make you sick. I would say that the same thing should be for people browsing the internet. Go to websites which can prove to you to a degree which is comfortable for you that they are serious about you protecting your personal information, about your privacy, and the secure transactions or stay on their website. For the vendors, regular review of your website to make sure that the website is not susceptible to cross-site scripting or SQL injections, which to many people it can be a strange language, but these are two most common web vulnerabilities found today on the internet, and based on the reports which we have on the studies, any website, the ratio is 1 to 10 or 1 to 30, which means 1 in 10 websites or 1 in 30 websites are safe from this type of attacks. And so it's not necessarily that the user gets attacked directly, but by visiting a website which was attacked, the user gets hacked. Really, vendors can do very simple thing as a scan their website for these web vulnerabilities, and you can get tools which are either free on the internet or for fee from vendors, and improve the security of the internet this way. It doesn't cost much, and it can greatly, greatly improve the security for all of us.
So, you know, you have this great background, and you're dealing on the business side and on the technical side, and you're also blogging and writing and so forth. So, again, you know, based on this tremendous experience that you have, what do you see as the most important broader business challenges and then their solution?
Yes. We live today in a world which I'm sure you and your listeners, they heard about, they read the book, The World is Flat. And we see this all the time, where competition or suppliers are coming from the internet in droves. Today, when you're looking for programmers, you can get responses not only from Vancouver, from Canada, from USA, from North America, but you're getting from Europe, from Asia, India. So the access to either resources or to there's more competition for you, it's increasing as, again, we know the network effort, the network effect, where the more people are on the network, the more valuable the network is, which on one hand it brings you major advantage, on the other hand it's a big threat for you. So I think that organizations should recognize this as a fact and embrace it as much as they can and take advantage, full advantage of where definitely in North America the awareness of technology, where many of the things started, I would say there is a head start compared to the other for the rest of the world. But definitely by no means it means that this head start here is for long, because all the other people, they are as smart as everybody in North America, and the competition will be really, really tough, and we haven't seen anything yet. So as a really broad or, a little bit further prediction, the business has to understand where the technology makes sense, how they can compete on global level, and how to do it as efficiently as possible. Because if they cannot, there are hundreds of our organizations, companies, they will do exactly this, and then people will be unpleasantly surprised when they are out of business.
So in your current role, then, what do you see as the biggest challenges in their solutions, and then how does this relate to business?
Yes, I'm in my current role. Yes, I'm running company, and I'm definitely seeing exactly what I was just describing. We have the same challenges, true on slightly smaller scale than larger organization, but the issue of suddenly the markets are opening for us and the competition is increasing for us. We see this exactly, and this is where we're trying to improve our internal business processes. We're trying to minimize the time where people are wasting on non-productive tasks, and we trying to really make our organization as lean and efficient as possible. That's one part. The other part of what's my challenge, or something which I definitely like, is to understand what business requires. So we're trying to identify all the issues which other companies are facing and then deliver solutions which are helpful to these organizations. And on our past experience, we know that there are certain things which can be delivered either locally within city limits or, the province, but also we know that the skill set and the knowledge what we have, we can definitely export around the globe. We've done it before. So the mix of, again, understanding the business and the technology, how technology can help business to flourish, that's something which we constantly strive to be as best as we can.
You mentioned that you're trying to run a lean operation and improving your processes internally. Are you using things like unified communications or collaboration to do that, or what sort of means are you using to do that?
Oh, totally. Actually, when we start the company, which was in 95, the first product which we brought to the market, it was a product which is now IBM product called Lotus Notes Domino, and that was, if not the first one, definitely among the first ones which integrated the collaboration messaging, security, the browser experience, everything into one product. And that's where we learn a lot about messaging, about collaboration, to some extent even social networking. So many things which are today coming to the market, we experience long time. And definitely, it's not that we using just this technology, but it was technology, which create a basis for us to explore technology from other vendors, so we understand the underlying principles of collaboration, and then we are able to help other organizations. But definitely in our company, we understand the success is the marriage between people and the technology. So the collaborative part is of our technology is helping to our people to be as best as they can, to share the knowledge and really deliver the things for the customer, which is world-class, no question asked.
You know, in all your travels and in all the work that you do, are you able to share some stories, perhaps something surprising or unexpected, amazing or humorous from your work?
I have a very interesting story, which you will be probably the first one to hear this kind of officially. We're preparing a blog or article about this. I was the affected person, so I don't see it as humorous as other people who I'm talking to. But I found it a little bit disturbing because it goes against everything what we're telling people to do. So the story goes like this, that I recently got a laptop which I wanted to build as my personal laptop. And it's an IBM laptop, T60. And I start building from scratch. I put all the operating system in. I download it from IBM/Lenovo website. I downloaded all the necessary drivers, patches, and everything. It took me all day to do this work. And because, even from our interview, you can see that I'm really about security, about privacy. The first thing which I put was password on the BIOS, so nobody, even if they turn on machine, nobody can get to the data on that machine. Nobody can even boot the operating system. And of course, because we're telling people about security, and part of it is having very good password, which means complex password, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, special characters. So I input this password onto the laptop. To my unfortunate surprise, unhappy surprise, when I implement the last patch for the BIOS, suddenly I couldn't type the password because the BIOS didn't accept special character. It would accept uppercase, lowercase number, but it would not accept special character. You think, okay, not a big problem. You can remove the battery from the motherboard. You can short circuit the memory, so the BIOS would get erased, and you can start from scratch. Unfortunately, this laptop from IBM/Lenovo is branded as the most secure laptop which exists because all the encryption and everything is happening within a chip which cannot be altered. And when I phoned IBM, the only thing they could suggest, because my laptop was no longer under the maintenance agreement, they to contact local dealer who can help me. And the remedy here is to replace the whole motherboard, which would cost me above $1,200 to replace the motherboard. And definitely all the data on the disk, all the work which I put in so far, would disappear because the chip encrypts the data on the disk. I went on the internet and I start searching for the problem because I couldn't believe that this is the only solution. To my surprise, I found a person which is in United States, and this person for $75 will tell you the password, and for $150 will replace the original BIOS, the original password, with password which you choose. So I feel kind of stupid here because we're telling people about security, about best practices and everything, and here we're buying the secure product which is branded by IBM. It's a product which is strength for Department of Defense. And then I find that somebody for $75, if I ship him the laptop, he will reset the password for me. And so some of your listeners might find it humorous, some of them might find it disturbing, but that's my recent story about technology. And now I have to reevaluate how to, what kind of advice I should give people when it comes to security and their laptops.
Well, that's an interesting story. So it shows that really anything can be broken in essence, right?
Definitely, you are absolutely right. If one can create great encryption, there are always people who are smarter than that and they can break the encryption. So the moral of the story is, I guess, if you don't want something to lose, don't put it on your computer.
You know, it's interesting, again, because you are involved in so many different kinds of areas, in, either on the business side or the technology side, and you have this great reputation. What are your top recommended resources and why?
You are absolutely right. To stay in today's world informed is I spend every day at least 2 hours reading information from the internet. I'm using sites sites which bring all the information together about technology. For example, News Yahoo. I'm using frequently. I am subscribed to about 50 news feeds from various either vendors or publications from around the world. I'm definitely always reading Wikipedia because I found it as a great source of factual information because not only these articles are good, but there are many references that I can go and check the correctness, the technical correctness of these articles. I'm definitely on. I'm not waging here the war between Britannica and Wikipedia, but I found the access to Wikipedia, and so far all the information I found very, very useful. So that's part of my staying up to date, or part of my education. Another part is that constantly, because we're working with major vendors, IBM, Microsoft, Novell, Bell Canada, and others. That they're supplying us with their information, with their point of view, and so it's another source for me. But I would say the most important thing for me is talking to other IT professionals. That cannot be substituted for anything else. So through places like LinkedIn and other various professional social network sites, I'm constantly in contact with other professionals, and I'm trying to understand the way how they see the world, and you know, gather information this way as well.
Well, it's interesting that you're saying that the top resource for you then is connection to communities, enabled through technology and other means. So, and because this podcast will actually go out to different IT communities, and it's interesting that you're saying that that's a great resource to get involved with.
Absolutely. I think that many times people get sucked into this belief that if we have enough technology, we don't need humans anymore. And I would argue that technology is here to help us, but it's still only the connectivity to other people who are smart, who are knowledgeable, who can provide great wisdom and perspective on things. That's the ultimate, at least for me. So definitely I'm looking forward, maybe out of this podcast, that I'll be able to talk with other similar-minded people.
Vaclav, we talked about a number of areas, from business to technology to trends and resources and challenges and solutions and so on. Now, if you were doing this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Yes, the questions, yes, that is, actually that's a very, very, very tricky question for me, what I would ask myself. I think that you found many interesting questions during this interview, which are very close to what I think it's right. The one thing which definitely I would like to talk more about or elaborate maybe in future with you is the very not clear ownership of digital information on the internet. I think that these days users don't have a place. All the users of the internet, they don't have place where they can store securely and privately their own digital assets. And not having full control over your digital assets, I think that something which we as IT technology professionals or as an IT industry, as a companies, I think this is what we should do much better than we are doing so far. I think that as was said before, right now we live in an age where in future it will be considered as a dark age of humanity, because there will be no records about us. Until before the internet age, many things were on paper, many things were inscribed in various means, but with bringing so much technology into our lives and not understanding how to preserve things for the future and how to create the digital libraries or how to create the digital assets for individual people, we are losing at this moment. And I think there is lots of work which has to be done for future generation when it comes to preserving our memory.
That's a great sort of question. And then what would you consider then the first steps to sort of move this along to some kind of a solution?
The answer to it, and I'm definitely not claiming that I have the full answer or the answer is as accurate or as future-proof as should be. It goes back to what I was saying about the business and technology, and it should go even probably further for people to understand every time they bring technology, they should understand what it means for them. You know, great example would be digital photography. You know, our parents, let's say when they took a picture, they had a film. They went, they get the film developed, and they could have as many copies as they wanted from the original. They store it safely in the box, and now you can hear that people can see pictures which are 100 years old. And they can find the grandparents, they can retrace the ancestors, etc. Well, right now we're moving into digital age where everybody, I don't know many people who wouldn't have digital camera. They take pictures, they don't have to take one picture, they can take 100 pictures at a time. And sometimes they print them, but definitely most people are storing these pictures on their computers. And again, I don't know that many people who take backups of these of these pictures. And unfortunately, the machine crashes. You know, within 3, 4, 5 years, every machine crashes, and the danger is that you're losing your digital assets here. So the suggestion or the solution is, before you bring any technology, try to understand the impact on your life, and if you are prepared to the way as you were saving your old pictures, if you are prepared to take the extra steps to retain your current pictures. So this is the example with pictures, but it goes with documents, with your music, with anything you have right now stored in a computer, and either educate yourself or get help from people who can tell you that, we can store the images, the music, that your digital assets for now, and this is the plan how we can move them into future. So a little bit more, I would say, and I know it sounds strange from the IT guy who's supposed to be always on the forefront of any technology inventions which comes to the market, I always take the approach a little bit slower and better understand the implications and then fully embrace it.
Well, Vaclav, that's a really interesting insight. So, you know, we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with our audience.
I truly appreciate the opportunity. It was a pleasure, and there is any possibility for future discussion, I would love to do that.
Well, that'd be great. In fact, maybe we'll do some future podcasts on different areas.
Looking forward.